Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 9 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. And for this episode, it's just going to be me talking. It's been kind of hard to get some guests on the last 2 weeks. As you may know, COVID, the Omicron variant, is hitting everybody hard. People that I know are getting sick. And, you know, for the sport of boxing and a lot of other sports, a lot of events have been canceled or put on hold. So maybe it's going to be a little bit challenging for the next couple of weeks to get some guests on because everybody's in a really weird spot. And I totally understand that. And that's why this episode today, I want to share a personal story. Something that's a little bit more revealing than what I had originally said in my first episode about just me. But I think it's really important to share this because a lot of people that are coming on this podcast are talking about some really intimate and personal things that have gone on with them. You know, and I feel sometimes a little bad that I'm asking about this because I'm putting a lot on them, and a lot of people aren't comfortable sharing their personal stories. I know for me, like I'm usually an open book, maybe to my detriment. But this story is something I haven't talked to too many people about, except some personal friends and family. And indeed, if you're a member of my family seeing me post this, I'm really sorry that this had to go through. But I think by sharing this story, anybody that goes through anything similar, it might be able to help them. Mental health is a huge focus of this podcast. And certainly mental health in the last few years has become really important and recognized now. So I want to share my story. So again, if somebody that's gone through something similar right now, or maybe in the past, maybe by hearing my story, they can feel a little bit, at ease. So if you were to look up Matthew Pine on Google, one of the first results you would see is missing Overton teen from a few different, websites. There was actually an Amber Alert put on me because I failed to report to work. I was working at the Canadian Tire in Yarmouth. I was a watering boy for the garden. And this whole story is about how I ran away to Montreal, or why I ran away to Montreal. And it's an interesting story, and I hope that you stay to the end and kind of hear all the different nuance and experiences that I went through. But the reason, again, I'm telling you this is not because I think it's cool that I did this. In fact, it was really dumb of me. But if you kind of follow my thought process, you might be able to realize that, okay, some things were at play here. And I can kind of understand maybe why he did this, or at that time why he did that. So the first thing I want to talk about is mental health. First, before I had anything like anxiety, in around 2014, I had a arrhythmia. My heart rate would have gaps between 3 to 4 seconds. And obviously that wasn't comfortable. I thought it was going to pass out all the time. I thought it was going to die all the time. Till eventually, I was at school and my method of getting my heart rate for the most part was actually exercise. So, you know, when I had my arrhythmia, if I went for like a run or did some push-ups or whatnot, my heart rate would be normal for a little while. And I think it was like the adrenaline or this or that. But I was in school at a physics class and it started happening. So I started doing some push-ups and it wasn't working. It wasn't helping my heart rate. It was still irregular. And that's when my physics teacher said, okay, we got to get this checked out. So she called an ambulance and they transferred me to the IWK. And that's where Dr. John Sapp had performed a electrophysiological study, really fancy term, but basically they had no idea about what was going on. So they took a, like a catheter or like a, and run it through to my heart, mapping it the whole time. And then they cauterized, two defective nodes. And the whole time I was awake, it was a 5-hour procedure. They had all these imaging devices strapped onto me. And when it was explained to me before I went into the operating table or whatever, they're like, yeah, it's kind of like Star Trek. And man, there was 5-6 different monitors with all these different things that I couldn't understand. Now, I think I had some type of numbing or whatnot, but I was awake the whole time. And unfortunately, it kind of scared me. They're like, yeah, there's a chance that you might get into cardiac arrest or this, but you're at the right spot. So I was like, oh no. But I couldn't feel anything. I could just smell something burning. And then miraculously, my heart rate became normal. So I used to have like a resting heart rate of around 80 to 100 beats per minute. And then after this, it was cut down to like 40 or 50, which is really crazy. Like that's a resting heart rate for like a marathon runner or whatnot, somebody who's really fit. And I was just an average Joe at the time. So it did take some time to getting adjusted to that. But yeah, I then later on, was realizing that I was having the same feelings of almost feeling like I was going to die, but I wasn't having the arrhythmia anymore. So, I used to have my arrhythmias, a lot of times when I was at the theater watching movies or whatnot. And unfortunately in this whole process, my movie going days are less and less as far as going to the theaters, because it's one of my triggers. I couldn't go to the movie theaters anymore because that was triggering, what I didn't know at the time, but now I know is just anxiety attacks. So I was feeling like I was going to die. It wasn't fun. Fortunately for me, I have people in my family and whatnot that have gone through similar things. And so they were able to help me, at least at the beginning steps. But that period of time is a little bit of a blur as far as what eventually got me to the event running away. But what I can say is that at the time that I ran away, I was in my last year of high school. I was taking the International Baccalaureate Program, which are like some accelerated pre-university type courses. And I also started my first job at Canadian Tire working as the watering boy, like I said earlier. All that pressure, as well as having a lackluster performance at the Yarmouth Karate Challenge, where I dyed my hair, or bleached my hair to be like a Super Saiyan from Dragon Ball Z. I did really bad in that tournament. And I kept reflecting to myself about what am I doing? You know, I was really into karate. I wanted to be an MMA fighter, and there wasn't any opportunities at the time in Yarmouth for MMA. So that and just not being able to deal with the anxiety that I had soon developed. One day, going to work, I decided I was going to leave everything that I had. And I took my father's vehicle, who he's a fisherman, so there was times where he didn't need the vehicle, and I kind of assumed that the car was, you know, mine to use until he needed it again. And I took that vehicle and I went to the bank and I took all my money out of the bank. I think it was like $300 or $400 at the time. I left everything, left my phone, didn't go to work, and I drove straight to Halifax. Now, important detail is that I never had driven on the highway before, as far as like, you know, going a distance like 100 kilometers or in this case 300. But I drove straight to the Halifax Shopping Center. And at that time, I said to myself, I want to go to California, of all places, to become a professional mixed martial arts fighter. If you're following right now and you're already raising an eyebrow, trust me, the story keeps getting more and more interesting. But this was my thought process at the time. So I wrote down the turn-by-turn navigations. I went to the Apple store at the Halifax Shopping Center, borrowed a piece of paper and a pen from the geniuses at the bar, and I wrote down the turn-by-turn navigation to get to Niagara Falls. At that time, I was thinking if I went to Niagara Falls and then crossed the border through there, I could maybe get to New York and then take some type of transportation the rest of the way to California. So obviously, this whole plan was flawed. Looking back on it, you know, it was crazy why I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. But in my mind, I felt like I was such a failure and I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted to reset. I wanted to start over. So I decided, yeah, I'm just going to move to California and not tell anybody. That wasn't smart. So started driving. I think I got to New Brunswick and then I took the wrong road. So, I was headed now to Quebec, which I had gone a few years ago. I went to a French immersion program in Quebec City, so I was partially familiar with the area. And I'm only intermediate when it comes to French, but I took the wrong way and we actually spent some time at La Ronde in Montreal. So when I realized that I was more destined towards Montreal, I said to myself, you know what? I'll go to TriStar, the MMA gym where George St. Pierre trains. So still with no phone, I started driving. Now this particular detail really had a psychiatrist later on questioning what was going on in my head. I had the radio on, and like I said, I'm intermediate at French, and the French radio was playing, and I thought that they were talking about me, this kid running away to Montreal. Now, I found out later that I was on some of the news stations for being a missing kid. I'm happy that there is a system for when somebody goes missing that you know, people are aware. But then I also question why there's a lot of indigenous youth and women that go missing that don't get the same treatment. So I don't know if it's like a, you know, white privilege at play, but everybody knew that I was missing at the time, which is good because it kind of led later to me being found and everything like that. So yeah, I thought the radio was talking about me running away. So I drove to a gas station. I drove for like 18 hours or so straight. I just went to gas stations to get some like navigation. I written it down on that piece of paper. But when I finally hit Montreal, nobody knew where TriStar was. So I was kind of like, you watch all these videos on YouTube and everything like that, and you think, you know, this gym where there's famous MMA fighters from. You know, you think everybody in Montreal knows it, but nobody knew where TriStar was. So I ended up having to, I think, go to a Walmart. Yes, I went to a Walmart and looked up the address and then written it down. And then I had to leave my father's vehicle at a parking lot. To finally make the trek to where I was supposed to be. And unfortunately, that was the end of that car because through the rest of the story, that car had stayed and eventually got wrecked. But I left the car there, private parking, and I started walking and eventually found TriStar Gym. I asked if I could get a month membership. I think it was around like $140 at the time. They're like, yeah, sure. Just, it was Faraz's brother. And I was already tripping. I was like, this is Faraz Zahabi's brother. That's so cool, right? So I was like, okay. I started filling the paper. And in the paper, I asked for your phone number. I said I didn't have a phone number. I asked for my address. I didn't have an address. So I just had my first and last name and birth date. But it was enough to get a membership at TriStar. So I went into the gym. There was a beginner Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class. I went and did that with Faraz. It was weird that there was like two classes of almost like 30 people. And he was going from one class to the next on the mats. I did actually get some instructional time from him, but I was like, okay, well, this isn't the one-on-one training that I was expecting, because for some reason at this big gym, I thought that I was going to get this one-on-one treatment. No, it doesn't work that way. I remember there was actually a funny story. I remember Alex Garcia from the UFC was in the wrestling fence section, and I don't know what I was thinking. I just walked by there and said, hey, you're really good at wrestling. Do you think you could teach me? And he was kind of like buzz off or whatever. He seemed like he was really into his workout. And man, he was very muscular guy. Yeah. So GSP wasn't there. So I decided I was going to go get some water and some other things. So I went to a nearby convenience store. I only had like $5 after the membership. And I bought two apples and a water, and I had no more money. So the next thing that came to my mind was, okay, my sister at the time was studying to be a social worker. So I knew that at the hospital, there should be some supports out there for somebody like me that's new to this area, that's looking for work and for somewhere to stay. So I went to another... like I think it was Walmart as well, and I wrote down the kids' help phone number, as well as I looked into the nearest hospital. So I went on a payphone and I called kids' help phone, and I explained my whole situation, and I'm really grateful for the support that kids' help phone had given me. They immediately, after hearing my story, like, okay, you got to go to the hospital. So I did just that. It was quite a long walk. In that walk, what was most notable was there was a Ferrari, like it was like a car dealership, but there was a Ferrari sign on it. Tried speaking French with this guy. He immediately started speaking English to me, which was kind of a common occurrence at that point and when I was in Montreal. So anyways, I just kept walking. I got to the hospital. And when I went to go and talk to the triage nurse, I just explained that I had run away and I'm looking for somewhere to stay, and talk to a social worker. And I got put into emergency psych. Yes, my friends, this is the part of the story where things get real. Getting into emergency psych at a hospital was interesting. So for the most part, there's just a lot of nurses that were on the their computers or whatnot. And it was the CCAs there that actually interacted with me, and I was able to have some good conversations or this or that. But when I eventually saw a doctor the next day, they told me this ultimatum. They said, we're either going to contact your family now that we know who you are because of your health card and this and that, or you're going to, and it'd probably be better for you to contact them. So I called my mom. I told her that I was all right. She was really happy to hear that I was fine. And I got transferred to a psych ward. Now, this hospital I was at was the McGill Associated Hospital, and it was actually a Jewish hospital. Now, I didn't know this until much later, but around the time that before World War II, there was in Canada a lot of anti-Semitism, which affected obviously the practice of many medical professionals who were Jewish. So they had basically gone under and started their own hospital. So for me at the time, being from a small town, I never had any experience with anybody that was Jewish. So it was a really interesting thing because, as you may be aware of, in North America, there tends to be a lot of more Christian cultural things. I guess to put it that way, like if you go to a hotel, right, and you open up the nightstand, there'll be like a Bible. Or, you go to a library, there'd probably be a Bible or Christian things or whatever. Well, when I was at that hospital, it was everything like that except Jewish. So it was Jewish texts everywhere. And it was interesting. I never knew that this was that there was a Jewish hospital. So yeah, I was into emergency psych for a week. And in that psych ward, when I first walked in, if you ever watch the show Beyond Scared Straight, the show where they take kind of like juveniles and bring them into a real like state penitentiary or a prison to try to scare the juveniles into to you know stopping to stop doing crimes and whatnot and to clean their act up. Well, it was kind of like that because there was this Jewish person with a yarmulke on. Outside of his room, and he immediately noticed me and said to me, "The bombs and the guns are in the closet." And he started laughing like crazy. And I was like, wow. It was hard to see a man of faith that was going through this type of stuff because normally you wouldn't think that he would say such things. Now I also saw a guy who had no hair on him whatsoever. He had no eyebrows. He had no beard. He had no hair. But he had a Hitler mustache at a Jewish hospital. He was really nice guy if you actually were able to talk to him. He was one of those roamers. He was like one of those guys that would be walking back and forth in the hallway of the psych ward. And last kind of character that I came across was this girl, this woman, really nice woman, but at nighttime she compulsively would open and close the drawers and organize things constantly. So I knew at that time when I was at that psych ward that I really didn't belong there. But looking at my actions now, I understand why I was there. I was doing some really irrational things, and especially when I told the psychiatrist that I thought that the radio was talking to me, I think he had every right to be concerned about me and my health. And this whole experience really, really, looking back at it, it taught me a lot of things. It r made me realize that mental health is like a spectrum where people are affected on different levels. And certainly looking at what I have now and everything like that, it's not by any stretch of the imagination extreme to what other people experience. But not going through this, I would have thought that that these people were making it up. But after having some spot my own battle with anxiety, I realize now that people like mental health and physical health are two extremely important things that we all have to control. So eventually, after a week, my mom and her boyfriend at the time had come and picked me up. I was not able to leave on my own volition. I wasn't able to like take a train back home. And I wasn't able to drive my father's car back, which was a huge thing because that was his car. So we lost his car. However, in this whole situation, I consider myself very lucky that nothing really bad happened to me, because I'm sure a lot of people that go missing don't come back. And if they do come back, something bad will happen to them, because unfortunately people prey on people like who I was at that time, lost, and people do bad things. So I'm really lucky that none of that stuff happened to me. But I really thought it was important to share this story, because when I have guests on in the future and they start talking about their things, just know that there really is no such thing as a crazy. You know, when we have these issues and these illnesses, it doesn't really reflect who the person is as a whole. You know, we like to look at somebody with a mental health problem or an addiction, and we like to blame the person for being a, or say that the person's a bad person because of that thing. But that is so far from the truth. People that have mental health problems or addictions are people just like everybody else. They just don't have the same set of cards as everybody else. And we have to not only take care of ourselves, but take care of others, and understand that everybody deserves to be treated well, because it might not be right now that you have a mental health problem, but especially with the stress that's been going on with COVID and the uncertainty, these external factors have really rose a lot of mental health issues. I remember when the pandemic first started, I called my doctor because my anxiety was through the roof. And I was surprised to hear that around 50 to 60% of the calls that my family doctor had received were about mental health. And if that's not putting something, if that's not showing to everybody how important it is, I don't know what it is. Now, obviously, in this whole entire story, there comes this idea that I want to be a fighter. And in fact, doing this podcast and still training at Tribal, I'm still continuing that dream that maybe appeared like it was crazy, you know, running away. That was definitely crazy. But it's not crazy to want to try and work towards something that you're passionate about. That's something that I want to do with this podcast and with my own personal training. Still pursue stuff that I find meaningful, but just do it in a smarter way. So yeah, that's about it for this story. I know it's brief. I really want to appreciate everybody that listened to the podcast, listened to my story. Now you understand, if you look me up, why it says missing Overton team. You know, I think I'm well beyond that now, but it's certainly a point in my life that's worth talking about. And, you know, I'm really appreciative of my family, my mom, my dad, my sister. You know, when I had run away, I had got like 100 friend requests, 200 messages. People cared about my well-being more so than what I was at the time caring. And I know now, you know, what I did wrong, and I learned a lot from that experience. And I really strongly encourage anybody that's listening, if you don't understand kind of your mental health struggle, it's not a bad idea to try and see a professional and talk to them. Or you can also use something like Kids Help Phone, which is something I've used since I was a preteen. I remember using that. They had, and I think they still have it, like you can have a form where you can send a message and have a counselor respond. I used that when I was a preteen about almost everything. Plus I had school counselor, had seen a lot of counselors because of kind of my childhood and everything like that. Try and see somebody, because the more and more you put it off, just like anything, whether it's taxes, taxes, homework, whatever, it's lurking on your back and it's going to attack at the worst time. So let's stay on top of it, everybody. You know, it's a new year, it's a new you. And hopefully this talk was interesting. Hopefully it's helped some people. Hopefully people understand me more about what I had went through. And yeah, and hopefully we'll have more guests soon. Please be patient, guys. It's not like I don't want to have more guests on. It's just a really hard time to have guests. But I'm hoping and I'm staying positive that things are going to get better. So take care, and as always, be safe. Bye.